Sports Ethos New York Knicks podcast, Andre Gallagher. That matinee game on Saturday against the Nets was a game. I was nervous about that game going in, and I never thought the Knicks would lose it, but I just hate matinee games. I hate matinee games. Our guy with the Clippers podcast, Sports Ethos Clippers podcast, Marquee, calls it matinee fever. I hate matinee games. The Knicks, apparently they got in at 5 o'clock the night before. And then you got to turn around and play a home game. I hate Madison Square Garden home games. I feel like it's a setup for the Knicks every time I see it. You know, these guys waking up, eating blueberry pancakes with their wives and girlfriends and kids, and then struggle busting it over to Madison Square Garden. You know, there's no time to work out before the game. A lot of guys shoot before the day of the game, no time to shoot before the day of the game. All their routines are thrown off. I hate it. It's a setup. And you know Brooklyn is always wanting to come after the Knicks and Nets next every time they play. They tried it. But at the end of the day, they ran out of gas thanks to Dante and Deuce McBride. When is the bloom going to fall off the road for Deuce and the Rose? For Deuce and that shot? He's not only is he hitting these shots, but he's hitting them with people in his face. I just want to say, I don't know if I've said this because I haven't spent a whole lot of time on Deuce and how good he's been. It was a year or so ago in the pod where I stressed over and over and over again that Deuce McBride was shooting well in the G League. And you see Mike Breen always brings it up on the broadcast because he repeats himself 1,000 times. I understand every game is different, but you know it gets to be too much sometimes. But he talked about it. And he shot very well in the G League, and he was lighting it up in the G League. And then you hear Tibbs talking about how he lights it up in practice. I always felt like it was a matter of time before he started shooting well in the league. And I said it time and time again here on this podcast. But even I did not think he was going to start shooting it like this. Like, I'm thinking if he's wide open, he's going to knock him down. This guy is shooting with hands in his face. He's shooting step-back jumpers. Golly. We talked about what the rotation was going to look like when everybody came back. I talked about how Bogey had until Randall got back to get his act together, but Burks probably had a little bit more leeway because of the position he played. I don't know. When things start to pare down come playoff time, I don't see how McBride doesn't play. Burks is struggling to get up to 15, 20 minutes. McBride's playing the whole game. And we talked about this before, how Tibbs has always been kind of against these small backcourts, but he didn't seem to be against it now. And listen, a lot of IQ fans are going to have a big issue with that. They're going to have a big issue with that. But there are matchups where having a small backcourt is probably going to hurt the Knicks. These just aren't those matchups. There was some argument that in the Denver game, he shouldn't have gone small in that game. And I always tell, listen, you can always tell when people are being disingenuous about Tibbs. On the heels of him scoring 29 points against Golden State and having that great game, how do you put him on the bench? I felt like the way the game in the Denver game, the way it played out, that Josh wasn't playing well. I felt like it was a precious game in terms of taking Josh out, not the starting lineup, but as the game progressed, giving Precious more minutes because Josh wasn't playing well in that game, not McBride. So your focus is really in the wrong place if you complain about McBride starting the game. The Knicks, I think they were down 2 points after the first quarter. Like, put yourself together. And you're focused on the wrong things. They were in, a 5-point game, 6-point game midway through the fourth quarter. This is a game on the road against the NBA champions, and you want to not just question, hey, it's debatable, I think they should have done this. No, but criticize the coach and say he's a bad coach, doesn't know what he's doing. It's so ridiculous and disingenuous, right? But what you saw in that game, because I thought Precious actually played decently in that game. I'm sure Tibbs has a different take on it, but I thought his energy was good, which is what I'm keeping an eye on. And he didn't play a ton when he should have, when Josh wasn't playing well. And you can understand Tibbs going down in flames with Josh Hart in the regular season. you hope not to see it in the postseason. But at the end of the day, Josh is a positive. It's a plus player. You get more than you lose with him on the floor. But when you have other options, sometimes like that's the call. Like you gotta you want to see Tibbs make the right call sometimes. And you're afraid with Josh struggling with his shot again that he's not going to make the right call. When it comes to Josh, when there are other options available, that's a scary thing to me. I'm still concerned about that. Especially when he's not hitting the shot or taking the shot and teams they're not even guarding him anymore. They're treating him like Ben Simmons right now. So that's cause for concern. But you saw Precious not play much in that Denver game as much as I thought he should. And then you see this Nets game, Precious hardly plays at all. And Jericho Sims is the one who came off the bench and played backup center here. And that, to me, I don't know how to look at that. There's two ways to look at it. Glass half full, Jericho Sims played very well against Brooklyn last time they played in Brooklyn. If you remember that game in Brooklyn where the Knicks had to play hard, they had to make some big plays at the end of the game to get that victory. Jericho Sims played very well in that game. And I remember doing the show talking about criticizing Jericho Sims for his rim protection, but in that game, he was pretty decent protecting the rim, right? But he's up and down. That's kind of the catch with Jericho, right? He's up and down. But Jericho Sims comes off the bench to play in that game, gets dusted off, and Precious hardly plays at all. So on the heels of the Denver game, I'm wondering two things. I'm wondering if Tibbs is seeing what I'm seeing with Precious, where when he plays lesser minutes, you see more of the pressures you saw in Miami and Toronto than what you have seen here in New York. I think the more Precious plays, the better he plays. I think it's a situation where Precious starts to get an idea what the other team is doing. He starts to anticipate, and that gives him that extra boost of intensity to make plays once he starts to see what's going on out there, which is a direct contradiction to what I was talking about a couple episodes ago about where Brian Scalabrine was saying that you can maybe do a three center rotation when Mitchell Robinson comes back, because centers don't need to get into the flow of the game the way wings and guards do. Something that I agree with in theory. I wouldn't disagree with someone who played the game and actually played big man position about something big man related. However, when it comes to Precious, it seemed like his play improved when he played more minutes. His intensity improved, his reads on the court improved, his confidence improved. Even though I don't see a lack of confidence, I do see him being a half step slow defensively. You saw it a little bit in the Sacramento game. So is it a situation, like to me, that's actually, I did it backwards. That's the glass half empty scenario, which includes this part. This is not me reporting anything. I'm concerned that Precious is now pouting because he's not playing as many minutes and the rotation looks like he might get edged out of it. And therefore he's not playing with that same intensity that he was playing with before. Glass half full would actually be Jericho Sims being rewarded for the game he played against the Nets and Precious just being rested because he's a little bit tired and worn down after playing so many minutes over the last month or so. But I'm really concerned about the whole idea that he's pouting and or he doesn't know how to crank it up in shorter minutes the way you would need him to. But he doesn't recognize trends and tendencies as quickly as he needs to in order to play with that kind of fire and desire that he played with before. That would mean that he's not going to be, if he can't play like he played before, he's not going to be in a rotation, because it was already a reach to find places to put him in a rotation before. Because I know that Tibbs did not play Sims because he thinks he's better than Precious. I think he might have played Sims because he was maybe saw an opportunity to rest Precious, so an opportunity to reward Sims for how he played in the last Nets game, but that's not usually how Tibbs does things. Tibbs needs to win this game. He's not going to do anything but play the people he thinks are going to help him win this game. You saw Bogey hardly play in the second half because every time Bogey comes in the game, he looks like a whole spaz out there every time he comes into the game. And we're not going to keep talking about Alec Burks and bogey every episode, but they're killing the Knicks. They're killing them. And that's the one thing with Deuce McBride that folks are not, I see a lot of people comparing him, oh, he's a new IQ. I mean, you're doing too much there, because the IQ that we saw this year and the IQ the Knicks have been waiting for consistently, him to consistently be, is one who creates opportunities. And that's what you have seen. That's what you've seen more with the Raptors than you did with the Knicks. You didn't see it consistently enough with the Knicks. But that's not something that Deuce is doing. It's not something he's being asked to do, but it's also not something that he's very good at. And I talked about in that. I talked about that in the preseason. I think I talked about that last year. I talked about it ad nauseum when IQ was still here, because he wasn't great at it when he was in New York. But Hart is probably the best option to create offense off penetration, and Deuce is perfect in the role that he's playing right now, being off the ball, attacking closeouts, shooting jumper. Stop trying to make people do things they're not good at. That's a sign of good coaching, that they're not doing that with him. And something that Hart is good at is creating offense. So those are the concerns coming out of that Brooklyn game. I don't care if the game was close. I don't care. Dante came through. You're starting to see Dante find his stride a little bit. He's still not shooting the ball as perfectly as he was before. And you know, some of that could be fatigue. Hopefully they don't need to play Dante big minutes in these games, so he can kind of, you know, rest up and get his legs back a little bit. I think that might be affecting Josh as well. That shot he has to find it. Because not only are you seeing him miss the shot, you're seeing him not want to take it. And that's the scary part. And over the All-Star break, he was able to fix that shot and shoot well for a long period of time. And then it just kind of went away from him, and he immediately got skittish with it. They can't afford him to not take that shot. And you've seen two games now where teams have just not guarded him at all. And it's hurting the team. It's hurting the offense. And that's what you saw in the Miami series. And that's not something that the Knicks can actually deal with. They can't sustain that, right? Because some of these teams, even if they're not good teams, they can put points on the board. Now that moves us to Detroit, who has played very well. They played much better. And I told you before that Detroit started playing better actually after the Muscala-Gallinari deal. People want to say they played better after the Bogey-Burks deal. It's really that deal that they started to play a little bit better. So they're playing better because Cade started playing better. If you look at his numbers, got better. His shooting numbers started getting better. They're playing better. They're just not winning games. And you saw they almost won that game at the Garden. They had to get that no call at the end. You have revenge factor with Evan Fournier. You know he didn't play well in that last game. You know he wants to play well when he comes back with another opportunity to play the Knicks. Grimes has not played well at all. We're not going to beat Grimes down, but he's not played well at all. But you know he is psychological with him, and he's going to try to turn it up a notch against the Knicks, and he's going to play with that same fire and intensity that he did last time. The Knicks don't have a lot of bullets in the gun. So if Brunson is not sharp, and he wasn't like super sharp in Denver, even though he had good numbers, and he wasn't super sharp against the Nets. And people are going to say, oh, because Mikal Bridges has length and he struggles against length. Stop that nonsense. I've seen him cook Mikal Bridges, and you would have seen it too if you actually watched the games. But he did not play well in that game. He did. So if you're seeing that version of Jalen Brunson, it's going to be a big deal. It's going to be a big deal. Now, Ausar Thompson is out for the season. He's actually turned the corner a little bit for the Pistons, and he's an excellent defensive player, somebody who was giving everybody a hard time. He was the player that was about to get that rebound where Dante fouled him at the end of that Detroit game. Ausar Thompson not being there helps the Knicks a little bit, because that's one less defender they can put on Jalen Brunson, and he's really an excellent defender, smart defender. So that's a big deal. That's very helpful as far as Jalen is concerned. Maybe he can get back, you know, get back a little rhythm. Because all of these people who keep saying that Jalen is selfish and he's shooting too much, You need to go look at the numbers and see how much the Knicks struggle offensively when Jalen's on the floor. He has to be aggressive offensively. And what happens is when he's aggressive and he's on, it opens up things for Miles McBride. It opens up things for Dante DiVincenzo. It gives them an opportunity to get the shots that they're good at taking. Okay, and what you also need to understand is once Jalen gets below the free throw line extended, he's in a very high percentage range for him. So for him to go look for Josh Hart, and if Dante's not open and Miles is not open, just passing it to him for the sake of passing it to him, that's not helping the Knicks. He's in a range where he's leading the league. If he gets up to the paint, he's like leading the league in paint scoring and field goal percentage. Not field goal percentage because the centers who dunk the ball always lead in field goal percentage. But guys who are actually scorers, he's like tops in the league. And you want to take him out? You want to make him pass that ball? Now, one trend that you've seen with the Knicks, and if you've been listening to the show, you know I've been saying this for a long time. The Knicks have to take advantage of Hartenstein pinning down smaller players in front of the rim. He's very good at scoring in those scenarios. He can also make his free throws. You've seen over the last few games the Knicks finding ways to get Hartenstein the ball a lot more often in those situations. And that is a huge shift in how the Knicks run their offense because you can go back years prior to Hartenstein, back to Mitchell, back to when Jericho Sims plays. These guys will have people pinned around the rim. They'll have alley-oop opportunities, and the ball does not come. Now, Mitchell is a different situation because Mitchell doesn't have great hands. He doesn't always create passing lanes. If he pins somebody down, a lot of times he just gets wrapped up and fouled, and he doesn't make his free throws. So I can understand avoiding that pass more often than not, but there are situations where it's like, listen, just throw the ball up at the rim, let him catch it up high and see what happens. If you don't want to worry about him getting wrapped up down low and the ball's not being thrown. But I get it when it comes to Mitchell, which is one of the reasons why there's going to be some adjustments when Mitchell comes back offensively because of his limitations offensively. It has actually hurt the Knicks in more ways than people realize because defenders have to account for Hartenstein more than they have to account for Mitchell. And Hartenstein finds passing angles, creates passing angles, and has more range to score from in the sense that if you give him the ball 10 feet from the basket, he can put the ball on the floor and get to the rim, something you haven't seen Mitchell do, even if you think he can do it. He hasn't done it. Hartenstein's understanding offensively, his reads offensively, these are all things that help the Knicks score around the paint, which is why Randle's field goal percentage around the paint at the rim was so much higher with Hartenstein than Mitchell Robinson. But the way you accentuate that and make that even a bigger weapon is to start actually feeding him the ball more often instead of forcing the shots or kicking the ball out to people who aren't open. Like if they're open, kick it out. But you're just getting it out of your hands because the defense is shrunk, but those shots aren't there, mostly because Josh Hart is on the floor so much and he's not shooting the ball well. And then if you got Bogey and Burks, they're also not shooting the ball well. So, whereas the Knicks on the paper are an outstanding shooting team for the most part, in actuality right now, most of these guys aren't hitting the shots. You got two guys hitting shots. So if you have an opportunity to get the ball to a capable paint scorer with a clean pass, give him the ball. Give it to him. And you've seen it the last two games. And they asked Hartenstein after the game, they said, what do you think is responsible? What do you think the reason is for, the offense that he's shown the last couple of games? And he said that guys, and he didn't mean this as a slight, but it is what it is. He said guys are just being more unselfish. And listen, there's some truth to it. There's some truth to it. And some of that does fall on Brunson. But Brunson is clearly not a selfish player, so stop casting aspersions. The point is, he could make that pass to Hartenstein more than he's been doing. And the more that becomes a habit, the better it is for the Knicks. Because now, if he's going to make that pass and Hartenstein's going to make them pay, then they're going to commit less intensely They're going to commit less aggressively is the term I want to use. Therefore, they have to kind of play the middle a little bit more because that passer Hartenstein is just as dangerous, and that leaves Brunson with a little cleaner look. So the more the habit is formed of finding Hartenstein down there, and the more Hartenstein actually pays it off, the more, in theory, that you'll see guys get him the ball. And a lot of times, it's smaller players that are on him. I don't think people realize what happens when you're running high screen and roll, and with Brunson especially, you have the big man who's actually like trapping Brunson and trying to bracket Brunson. The low man defensively comes from the other side of the court, the weak side, and he tries to tag, which means guard, push out of the way, take away passing lanes to the big man and box him out. That guy is too small for Hartenstein. So if you can get him the ball, Hartenstein is showing that he's going to score that on a consistent basis. When you play the right way, and you hear Nick talk about it all the time, when you play the right way, the game rewards you. You make that pass, what happens? Guys have to be less aggressive going after Brunson, which either gives Brunson the shot. If they're too aggressive, it gives Hartenstein the shot. If you sink down on Hartenstein at the front of the rim because you know he's effective there, that means the weak side corner and the weak side wing has an open three. If you don't do that, if you force a shot, if you're Brunson, maybe you make it, maybe you don't. Brunson's been very good. He's going to make it a lot. But you force that shot, and now the defense gets in a rhythm where they start getting lazy and they don't even have to guard Hartenstein anymore. So they get more aggressive on Brunson. That makes the pass even harder to make if he feels like he needs to make it. Because you missed your opportunity, you missed your windows, it becomes a mess. So now my concern is what happens when Mitchell comes back? Because Mitchell hurts all of those things. That's why when Mitchell said that he'd rather come off the bench, from your lips to God's ears, man, shout out to Joe Meningo on that one. From your lips to God's ears, come off the bench. You think you can do more coming off the bench? Come off the bench, my boy. Let's see what you can do. Because Hartenstein has to stay with that starting unit and that finishing unit. It has to be Hartenstein because now you have to guard all five players on the floor, asterisk on five, because you don't know what you're going to get from Josh Hart right now. Now, briefly, let's talk about the fact that OG's out again. If you're smart about it, you don't play OG against teams that the Knicks can beat without OG. At the same time, the Knicks have to win these games, and this Detroit game actually makes me nervous because Detroit is not like they're playing decently. Right, so the Knicks have shown that they can beat teams that they can beat. They're going to have the hiccups here and there. But you should have confidence in this team at this point with 12 games up in the season. If you watch the whole year and understand it's a different team than it was early in the year. So if you focus on the second half of the year with a skeleton crew this team has, they have beaten the people they're supposed to be beating for the most part. There might be one loss in there that I can't even think of what it was at this point. You know, they've beaten the teams they're supposed to beat. This is the team they're supposed to beat. Nobody's easy. The guys on the court, if they're healthy and they're playing hard, they have enough to beat Detroit. Go out there and win this game. It's not going to be easy in my mind. I don't think it's going to be easy. But it's a game that they should win. And there's no need to bring OG Anunoby back to play against the Detroit Pistons. There's no need to bring OG Anunoby back to play against Brooklyn. So your concern is OG really that hurt? Or are they just playing it smart? We don't have the answers. But if you look at the Knicks' schedule coming up, the next three games are against teams that they should beat. And if we're talking about the standings, we've been talking about trying to get even the 2 or the 3 seed. I don't think the 3 seed, if you look at the Bucks schedule, I don't think the 3 seed is viable anymore. The Bucks have enough guys, enough people in that schedule where they can maybe go the rest of the year with maybe 3 losses. And they have a 3-game lead on the Knicks and Cleveland for that matter, and Orlando, who I've talked nothing about and I refuse to start now. There's no point in even starting now. Don't start now. Let's just not even think about Orlando right now. They should be thought at, no disrespect, but I'm not going to start now. Look ahead, right? The Bucks probably not relinquishing that 2 seed. That makes sense. That That tracks. So you're really looking at the Cavs. And there's some conversation about whether or not trying to avoid Boston in the second round is even worth it, because the team that you play in the first round at the three seed, it might be the Pacers, it might be the Heat. Two teams that on the list of teams I've made that I don't want the Knicks to play, those two teams are on it. And Orlando isn't. All right. So you get into a be careful what you wish for scenario. But to me, you're only careful in those scenarios when you're losing on purpose to get a matchup. When you're trying to forge ahead, when you're trying to win as many games as possible, that's positive. You shouldn't be worried about any karmic basketball god backlash when you're trying to win as many games as possible. You play whoever's in front of you, you deal with it. But when you're losing games, or I don't really care if we win because I'd rather play this team than that team, when you're doing that kind of nonsense, I feel like that's when you ask for trouble. That's when you put pressure on yourself. And before you say, oh, well, you're trying to avoid Boston, everybody is trying to avoid the one seed in the second round. That's the benefit of moving up in the seedings, is that you play a softer road in theory before you get to the Eastern Conference Finals or the Conference Finals, where you play the best team. You don't want to play the best team in the second round. Right? That's what being rewarded for your regular season is supposed to do. So the Knicks still have an opportunity. Right now, they're a half game behind Cleveland with a tiebreaker. Cleveland's schedule, I went through their schedule. I'm not going to do it here on the show, but you can make an argument that they have a little bit, and I'm not going to go by winning percentages of the opponent, because at this time, some of those winning percentages, how the team played early in the year and how they're playing now, those are different animals. I looked at it and I saw that they could very easily only lose three games, two, three games, which is consistent with the Knicks. If you look at the Knicks schedule, even though the next three games are against soft opponents, let me just give you the next three games for the Knicks. You got Pistons, Raptors, and Spurs. That's the next three games. And then you got Thunder at the Garden. The Knicks lost their first matchup. They also lost that first matchup with a different roster than they have now. Hopefully OG can be back for that game. That would be a huge help if OG is back for that game, because now you have somebody to put on Shai to slow him down. Jalen Williams hit some big shots in that last game Knicks played against OKC. And that wasn't a game. That OKC game wasn't a game that I thought the Knicks were going to win the first time around. But I told you that second game, to me, let me just see if that's a back-to-back, because that's always a pain in the butt. Not a back-to-back. Okay. And it's an evening game. So that's a game that I think the Knicks can win, but you look at this, you don't look at that and say, look at that and say they should win it, but that's a game that they can win. And if OG plays and you get a decent OG, if you remember, OG played well in his first game back after a long layoff. So if you get the OG you got in that first game when he came back against the Thunder, hey man, maybe you have a chance to win that game. And that might be the win, assuming you don't lose to like the Bulls, because you got to play them a bunch of times. That might be the win that gives them the third seed. Yeah, but you got to take care of business against the Pistons, the Raptors, who are having a hard time. Shout out to Emmanuel Quickley, who lost an uncle, I believe, this weekend. So you have RJ, who lost his little brother, which is a tragedy. And now you have IQ, who lost his uncle. Some really bad times for the ex-Knicks over there. All the best to those guys. But the Raptors are playing with a skeleton crew. You have one of those situations where, guys are playing for contracts and trying to show off. That's always a pain in the butt. But you take care of business. These next three games are games the Knicks have to win. They present different challenges. I didn't mention Malachi Flynn being another revenge game, because Malachi came out cooking last time against the Knicks. But these are games you take care of business. You lose these games, you deserve what you get. Bottom line, the Thunder game is an asterisk. If the Knicks win these next three games, we'll revisit the schedule, see where things are. But if you look at the schedule, they're pretty much neck and neck with the Cavs in opportunity to beat them, to tie them, and get the third seed. The third seed comes with its own set of challenges. You're either playing the Pacers or the Heat. And those are two teams that you'd rather not face for several reasons, but two teams that Dick should beat, bottom line. And then you go into that second round, and now you're playing, you know, possibly that Bucks team, who knows? Or maybe you get a situation where the Bucks lose to the Heat again, and you play the Heat in the second round again. You know, with, obviously, we're way ahead of ourselves. I just think the three seed is, that's where the karma is. The karma is in that three seed. I don't think the Knicks could have done much better than the three seed if everybody was healthy. In theory, you could argue if OG and Randle didn't get hurt, they could have been the two seed. But it is what it is. There's really nothing the Knicks could have done to be better than be in a better spot than where they are now. So give them credit. Give them credit. At Sports Ethos on Twitter, at Ethos Knicks. Also follow my personal Twitter profile. It's at The Watchers 7. I'm Andre Gallagher. Until next time.